Welcome to MedShark Insider with Bill Fukui, your expert host on all things medical marketing and SEO.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of MedShark Insider. Looking forward to sharing a lot of good information today. And really the guest that I have today is one of my longtime friends, but really he's a colleague that I respect so much of what he does. Because as a marketer, I've always struggled with, you know, whether we were doing TV advertising or radio or now the internet, we were generating a lot of leads to practices, but yet we were getting blamed when they weren't, they were poor quality or whatever the reasons were, they were not getting business from it. So today I've got Dylan Klemna with OptiCall. And he is one of the, he's been in this business, in this space for a long time. I've known him for a number of years, and they do specialize in medical intake. So, Dylan, welcome to the show today.
Well, thanks for having me, Bill. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, well, do me a little favor. I would like for you to kind of give a little bit of background on who you are, kind of what you've done over the past number of years, and kind of, why what you do is of value to some of our clients.
Absolutely. So we've known each other since 2008. I actually started a marketing company myself that used OptiCall. So I got to know them pretty well and approached the CEO, our CEO, Phil Mercier, about how I thought I could help grow the company. So OptiCall specializes in converting elective medical leads into consultations. So originally the core service was around handling all calls that come through. We've got a variety of different packages now where we've got overflow, extended hours of coverage. Now we're seeing trends where more digital leads are coming through. So
right.
Web leads. So we've got a new program kind of catered just to that. We call Capture. So, really, it's all about just creating an exceptional experience from that first point of contact. When you're mm-hmm. talking about elective leads versus like an insurance-based
prospect. Big difference.
Yeah, people have choices, and it's, I'd say with like a insurance-based general ophthalmology practice, they can kind of get away with minimum levels of service where people will go mm-hmm. to the closest provider that takes their insurance in a lot of cases, but mm-hmm. you're talking about a procedure that's worth several thousands of dollars, your expectations are a lot higher. So we really try to create awareness with practices on what that initial experience is like and just some good takeaways on what you can do to provide consistency and maximize that first step.
You know, Dylan, you talked about, you know, the insurance and not what I would call non-elective types of, treatments and whether that's ophthalmology and general ophthalmology or, reconstructive plastic surgery or just general dentistry. I mean, just in general, a lot of them are insurance driven. They're really not spending a lot of marketing dollars to get the phone to ring. So it's just kind of, they never really see the value or the cost. I guess maybe not the value, but the cost mm-hmm. of what it takes to generate a phone call.
Yeah.
You know, from an elective cash paying patient, and because they've just been a lot of the times they have like an RN or somebody that's been on the clinical side mm-hmm. that's been managing, you know, their telephone intake, thinking, man, they are the best person, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. What is it that you see, you know, with practices that have, you know, that either are in the process of transitioning to more elective or they're not maybe fully elective. They're still doing a lot of insurance-based stuff. What do you see as the most common mistakes or misses where conversions are being missed? What do you see in that?
Well, I feel like a lot of practices don't really have good systems to measure. So they don't have a lot of sight out of mind. When you think about a busy practice, the doctors, the administrators, they're dealing with new technology, they're dealing with customers, they're dealing with staff, their own personal lives. So Those phone calls especially are out of sight, out of mind. So yeah. Until we do our free lead conversion assessment, we place recorded calls with practices' consent to just get a barometer on what that experience is like. And we encourage practices to do that on a regular basis, not only on your own staff, but on your competitors as well. We're doing something similar with web forms as well, now that that's where things are going. So we'll place contact forms, we've got our own information that we use and we document when we submit the form, and we're looking for speed to lead and consistency. Okay. And we'll find, like, even the same staff member might call one time, leave a voicemail the next time. The response time could be like 2 hours one time, could be 2 days the next time. And then, and we also find forms that are not even responded to. Oh, so it's a real eye opener for the practice.
You know, it amazes me today. Amazes me today, because every once in a while when I do an assessment of a practice, one of the things I do is, if we generate leads, who's going to be handling these? Mm-hmm. And I will secret shop them without the practice even knowing, or even the doctor knowing. And when I do the assessment and show them what's kind of what the status of their online marketing, part of that is intake. Mm-hmm. And amazing how many goose eggs when it came to how frequently I got a response. And we're talking a week yeah. out, and I haven't gotten anything from that practice. Amazing.
And that's a great point. I know I've mentioned this to you before. We call it fumbling the ball on the goal line. So you could be spending a couple hundred dollars per lead just to get that phone to ring or that form to come in. It's really important to have good systems in place. And then the people that are often tasked with handling these responses or the initial intake, they're multitasking. They haven't always had the best training. They might have people in front of them that are checking in. They might be expected to be on the consultation or even the procedure itself. So it's pretty high expectations. So just going through the process and creating awareness, you're going to get some good takeaways in terms of how to take control of that phone call. Because most people in the medical space feel like they're doing their job if they're answering questions on a phone call, where it's a little more involved, where it is a bit of a sales process, and that shopping around, and it's important to maximize those opportunities. So if somebody just calls and asks about the price for CoolSculpting or LASIK, we find a lot of people that handle that initial intake, they're letting the callers steer that call, where it's important to be able to take control, engage the caller. Oh, I can definitely help you with that. Is this your first time contacting us? Great. May I get your name and number in case we get disconnected, and not go overboard in like information capture mode. But the whole idea is that you're creating an experience, because I don't think people necessarily want the cheapest when it comes to elective procedures. I think they just want to know that they called the right place and they're going to get a good value.
You know, you're talking about developing a rapport or a connection, kind of a relationship, this level of trust. I even say that when we're developing websites, we've got to start, even when they visit the site, they'll determine whether or not there is a sense of, you know, like a likability, or there's something about this practice that I like. And you use the word, you know, the description of fumbling it at the goal line. So appropriate when my Denver Broncos are just really sucking wind this year. They're fumbling all the time. In fact, they never even have a quarterback. but the intake process. So for example, one of the things that practices haven't really come to really understand is that the average cost per lead, especially with digital, is going up. The cost to generate a lead digitally has gone up. I mean, we've been doing internet marketing, you know, websites and SEO for even before Google was out of its beta stage 20 years ago. And at that time, we were also doing TV and radio. And, you know, I would tell my TV advertising clients, it's going to cost you anywhere from maybe $150 to generate one lead when you're doing mass media. Years ago in digital, because, you know, digital was so easy to do, there was less competition, And, you know, even with optimization, you just did a few things and man, you were on the first page. You were way up there for everything. And so clients were saying, oh, I'm getting all these leads, and we were tracking the email forms. It was coming out to about $15 cost per lead, okay, back then. Granted, we weren't charging a whole lot for it, but the cost per lead for digital is definitely going up. I've seen some of them as high as, you know, $100, $150 cost per lead, even on digital. Not to mention if you're doing pay-per-click advertising, you know, the cost to actually generate a lead is really expensive. So to, quote, fumble it at the goal line, man, there's nothing more frustrating from a marketer, because we're held accountable for that. Mm-hmm. You know, we are held to how much revenue did the practice, what is our ROI, and all those things, you know, get calculated into their, quote, marketing. But it ends at, you know, at the phone call or when a form is being responded to. So when you're saying, you know, speed to lead, what kind of time frame are you talking about? What are the expectations of, you know, following up on, say, email or chat leads that may come in digitally?
Great question. So we use the theory, the John Smith theory, about in order to buy what John Smith buys, you have to see the world through John Smith's eyes. So if you're a consumer and you're shopping around, it's kind of like, what are your expectations? Like, I recently was calling like pest control for our backyard and left some voicemails, and the first person that called me back ended up getting the business. You know, you look at, you kind of use your own process nowadays. You go to Google, you use a combination of what their reviews are, how many reviews they're getting, usually start in that organic section. So it's all about what your expectations are. There was a study done by MIT a few years back about lead response. And there's actually a lot of studies out there, but the common thread among all of them is about the faster you get to these leads, the more likely you are to convert. Mm-hmm. So in that study, I think it says if you don't respond within 60 minutes, your likelihood of converting those leads decreases by half. And naturally, the faster you get to them, the greater the likelihood of converting them. Mm-hmm. So for us, we're trying to create a scalable solution. So if we had zero gap in our response time, like if everybody's responded to within 30 seconds, then we actually might be overstaffed for our team. So we've set goals for our team, and we're usually within 15 minutes on that initial response.
15 minutes, I think, is, wow, that's more than reasonable. Mm-hmm. In fact, we can't
promise that necessarily. It's just
sense
of urgency that you might get an influx of a bunch of leads coming in at once.
And I've seen that statistic in terms of, you know, how quickly leads grow cold, I think was the title of it, is that digital leads grow cold, you know, very quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't stay hot for very long. And I've read similar kinds of things. One of the things that I found as a salesperson, and I try to put myself, like you said, the John Smith thing. Well, mm-hmm. I'm a sales guy too. And I know when leads come in, you know, here's my train of thought is, if I get a lead and somebody sent me an email, guess what? They're free. When I'm trying to get in touch with, you know, a hard to reach person, like a surgeon or a dentist or an attorney, whatever they are, these are very busy people. Mm-hmm. And that's no different than the average consumer. We're all busy. Okay. Mm-hmm. But when the leads come in, what does that tell me? That tells me I'm either on my phone or I'm at my desk and I've got some free time to talk to somebody. Okay. It's sure. A window of time that I have, you know, so it's the sooner you can get somebody while that topic is top of mind and they're motivated to pick up the phone and call. I think this kind of goes back to your experience and the expectations that consumers have, like what would John Smith expect or what I mm-hmm. expect. It is, you know, very similar to what you're saying. I may visit 5, 6, a dozen different websites and there may be something in one or two or however many I feel like I need to call, but there is something in them that made me feel like I kind of like these people, and your expectation of them is that you're going to carry that quality or that perception of that you're good to the phone call. And when you don't get back to them on the phone call, or you don't respond to them or do it in a timely manner or manage it in the right way, all of a sudden they're left disappointed. It's not what I expected, even after visiting 6 or 7 different websites or whatever, and I chose you of one of the two, and yet, wow, that wasn't as good as I was kind of expecting. I was maybe expecting a little more.
In terms of what you're saying, Google calls it a micro moment, which is that.
Oh, micro moment. I love that.
When somebody's emotionally compelled to pick up the phone or fill out a contact form. So things can change so quickly. You may reach out on Friday, come Monday, maybe you bought a car over the weekend. Your mindset may be totally different.
No more disposable income there.
And somebody's perception is their reality. So It kind of starts with their perception of your website, your reviews, your social media, what kind of vibe are they getting? And then that initial phone call, that initial response from a web lead really kind of sets the tone. So you may have this idea that you have this great internal reality or inside perception of your practice. Or what do we call that? Inside reality. But are you turning that into your outside perception? So creating that experience from that first point of contact is that probably a deciding factor on whether somebody chooses to come into your practice or somebody else.
Do you have any different statistics? For years we've always used the email form submissions and such. Now you're starting to get a lot of these digital, almost instant communication, like live chat and text messaging, where I think the expectations of, the visitors are very different. Do you have experience with practices that engage with, say, a live chat agent, services that actually have live people managing the chats versus, say, companies that use like bots, like some automation, they're almost anticipating what the questions are and then they feed up the, generic kinds of stuff. Do you have any, how do you guys manage those?
Yeah, so we have clients that have different services, and I feel like they all kind of have their place in a sense that it's increased communication. It's kind of an evaluation of like, where is your practice? How much do you want to spend on this? I look at the chat as kind of like an online concierge that it's just one more tool to help with that consumer experience. It's not always just leads coming through. It could be existing patients. It could be, we've seen stuff like, if you're seeing halos or something where like medical issues, so there's that too. I think it's just a matter of communicating with customers on their terms. Texting is huge. We've added texting in our web response program. We've got some interesting stats from an article that we did recently. I'm just looking for it as far as the likelihood. So 95% of text messages are open and responded to within 3 minutes of being delivered. Compare that to emails, which is typically 15 to 20%. And you think about like your own routine. I don't know if everybody thinks like me, but a text message, you're going to see it. You kind of get a vibe for if it's somebody reaching out to you, if it looks a little too automated, all those things kind of factor in, like where it's from and how personalized it is.
Yeah.
Texting's been a great tool. A lot of millennials are using it. A lot of X-geners and baby boomers. I think everybody is. We're using a combination of all those methods. So like with our web response, when we do the assessment, we show practices, very few are emailing and leaving voicemails, where if it were my practice, I would kind of want the process that we use, a combination of phone call, email, and text, kind of whatever it takes to get them over the top, because we're all working hard to get these leads, make sure we're maximizing them.
you know, one of the things that, you know, that in terms of the quality or maybe the expectation of the leads when they come in, whether, you know, through the channel, you know, kind of dictates somewhat of the quality or the expectation of the visitor. It's like, I use my own personal experience. My wife, when she used to email me something to the office or something or forward an email, if I didn't get to it until I got home from work, no big deal. Mm-hmm. But when she text messages me, man, if I don't get back to her right away, I get another text message. You busy or, you know, what's up, you know, kind of stuff. The expectation is very different with text messaging. Mm-hmm. You're expecting something like, I expect you to get back to me. Mm-hmm. Okay. Whereas emails, if I don't talk to her about it until I get home, hey, not a big deal. I mean, I think that applies to, you know, like you're talking about the millennial generation, man, that they prefer that over a telephone call half the time, you know.
Sure.
I even get some practices that say, you know, I would always push the phone calls. I'm always a big proponent of phone calls are always the highest quality for two reasons. Number one, it takes somebody at a different, a more motivated level to engage, you know, and kind of expose themselves with a phone call, mm-hmm. as opposed to voyeuristically texting something digitally or sending an email or something like that. I'm still kind of, it's not like what we're doing right now. That's mm-hmm. different. Okay. So I always say that phone calls are always the highest quality, but also because you're usually staff are better at handling telephone calls than they are following up with email leads. They've never really been trained or taught. What do I put in there? Or how do I turn this digital communication actually into a phone call where I'm talking to somebody? Which is the goal, you yeah. know, with a lot of those. Very few people are going to, I mean, they're not going to book a surgery having not spoken to somebody in the practice, okay, or a consultation. They almost have to talk to somebody when they're ready to go to the next day, you know, stage. So in terms of when you're dealing with practices and you're saying, you know, the questions when they're talking about price or maybe triaging, you know, post-operative, you know, experience, some of those leads or engagements are going to be existing patients. What do you say to the practice or to the surgeon that says, even with those or even, you know, questions about the practice, about a particular procedure or whatnot, what do you tell the surgeon that says, you know, unless they're in my practice, I don't want anybody talking, you know, to my patients, or I don't want anybody talking to leads that I'm spending a lot of money for. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with those kind of practices in terms of recognizing they're missing opportunities?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. So we like to start with an assessment so we can identify the opportunities for improvement within the practice. I'll show them our process. We've developed our own phone scripting software. It's pretty sophisticated, dynamic scripting, where we're able to provide consistency with a service mindset. We call it logical progression. So every okay. call follows the same flow, a proper introduction, exploration, education, and closing. Usually when they see the demo, their conviction's going up that these guys actually know what they're doing. They're not just an answering service offshore. These guys actually specialize in the space where,
okay,
yeah, it's just showing them. And then we also have the stats. Like when you were talking about the difference between a phone lead and a web lead, we put out our medical marketing outlook annually. We convert over 75% on inbound phone calls to consultations among all our clients and
pretty good
different specialties we work with. Mm-hmm. So web lead response, that's a newer area within the past couple of years. We're finding that our conversions are closer to 35%, okay. which sounds low, but if practices actually go through and track how many web forms are completed.
Everything that comes in, yeah.
yeah. So that's the difference between a phone lead and a web lead. With these phone assessments, they don't know what they don't know. So yeah. I would say probably 90% of the time they result in lost leads, meaning no name or phone number is ever gathered.
Okay.
They're not asking for the appointment, so there's no way to follow up with those. So typically, unless they have recorded calls at the practice, there's no record of those. And even if they have recorded calls,
that's true.
They're typically not accessing those unless something's in question because they're busy. The web forms are a little more transparent that you can actually go back and track that. So we have like a revenue calculator where it kind of comes down to the numbers in terms of, I don't mean to get too promotional what we do, but it's a very educational process. We'll look at, I'll ask them questions like, do you know how many phone leads you get each month? Do you know how many web leads you get? And those are kind of hot buttons too, because they most of the time they don't know. So we'll kind of work backwards. Well, how many procedures are you doing? And what's the average revenue per procedure? What do you think your no-show rate is? And what do you think your conversion from consultation to procedure is? And we come up with, it's a little arbitrary, but we come up with some realistic projections of what typical monthly revenue is like for the practice. And I do it separate for phone calls and web leads because we're finding the difference in the conversions. And then we just kind of go through the numbers where typically with a 5-10% increase on just lead to consultation conversions, when you're talking about procedures that could be worth several thousands of dollars, even $3,000-$4,000, it doesn't take much to move the needle where you can get a few more patients in the door. I mean, the ideal situation for us is that we're going to be providing a better patient experience, freeing up time for the staff to focus on the customers in the practice, and providing a good ROI. So, so for us, it all has to kind of make sense because we don't want to bring somebody on that's not the right fit. If they don't have enough volume or revenue per patient.
So knowing that, okay, so at some particular point, it may make sense to have some assistance managing or helping manage leads. I've got some clients, you know, I've got one practice when I was working with, was generating, you know, close to 900 leads a month. Okay.
Impressive.
900 leads a month. It's a pretty high volume, you know, practice. And I've got other ones that are, you know, 500-600. If you add in, you know, phone calls, emails, chats, you know, 500-600 leads a month. I know that they're not converting a high percentage. It's all, you know, for them, it's a, they almost get addicted to the numbers.
Yeah.
They just get addicted to the numbers. Because at the end of the day, there's only so many surgeries one surgeon can do. but even so, at what point do you think it makes sense for a practice to either get, do you guys do like overflow? Like if they're not able to get to it, do they, or do you do it certain hours of the day? You know, I don't have somebody handling, you know, I don't expect staff, and I usually don't recommend staff take the phone home with them and, you know, take calls over the weekend and stuff like that. Although some practices do have, you know, patient care counselors and stuff like that, that do that. At what point do you think it does make, what kind of numbers are we looking at in order for it to make sense for a practice to invest in some support for some of these, you know, leads?
Well, that's a great question. So when it comes to overflow, extended hours of coverage, and to answer your question, we're not 24/7. OptiCall is 8:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday.
Okay.
And 6 on Saturdays and Sundays. We've just found from 18 years of experience that that's what's most cost effective for us and our clients.
Okay.
So when we started, we originally started in LASIK surgery, and then we've gone into other areas of elective medical, but kind of a rule of thumb in LASIK, patients are typically worth around $4,000. So if that's the number, overflow, extended hours of coverage, my rule of thumb is if we can book 5 additional consultations when their staff is busy during the day or with our extended hours, if half of those convert into patients, that's about $10,000 in revenue, 2.5 at $4,000 a surgery patient. That's enough to cover their investment in OptiCall and cover their own costs and provide a better experience. So like anything in addition to that would be a bonus. So those numbers will change as like the revenue per patient goes down or up. So and we right. might need a little more if the average revenue is $2,000, where usually our minimum for our service to be cost effective, patients should be worth at least $1,000, ideally more towards $2,000. Okay. So sometimes we come across practices where they don't generate enough revenue per patient and we're maybe not the right fit, but we can give them a lot of good takeaways in terms of the process. The process is relevant for any procedure. It's just in terms of, is our service going to be cost effective for them, where we want to set people up for success. On web forms, mm-hmm. I usually say around 30. Like if they're getting 30 or more, that's where we can make an impact on saving them money, or not even saving them time and increasing conversions where they're right. getting good ROI, freeing up time for the staff, and that, just that peace of mind. So I call it elegant organization, in that you're getting booked consults from our team on a weekend. You get a confirmation email on a Saturday, maybe when your office is closed. So that's right. pretty cool. Peace of mind knowing that you're working hard on the marketing side to generate these leads, knowing that you've got a team behind you, where the overflow extended hours of coverage is just a good way to kind of walk before we run, to earn credibility with a practice. A lot of times the biggest competition is the staff itself. So they're mm-hmm. like, who's this outside company? So that's a good way to start, because then they know we're there to support them and kind of backing them up in the beginning. And once mm-hmm. they get a feel for our process, they might feel more comfortable transitioning potentially all the leads over to us.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, I'm going to go back. I'm going to regress a little bit. You talked about, you know, kind of secret shopping competitors, secret shopping your own practice. Mm-hmm. And I do think that isn't done enough in most practices. They almost take their people for granted. And I, as a salesperson, I know, in fact, I'm a much better consultant and salesperson when I'm accountable to somebody. Mm-hmm. So working with MedShark, I actually work with a gentleman, Seth, who is, I mean, he is probably the most high energy, just always thinking, but he's very, you know, he holds people accountable. And just working with him, I find that I'm much more accountable. How often would you say a practice really needs to be keeping their own tabs of their own performance? Mm-hmm. How often should that be? And the second part of that is, what is it that you're looking for? Is it just the speed to lead? Or is it, you know, when you're secret shopping, what is it that you're looking for? So those two things.
Yeah. I would, if it were my business, I'd probably want to do that quarterly. I think it's relative to the goals of the practice and what area they're trying to grow. At least annually, that mm-hmm. kind of need that checkup. That's our call to action. It's our loss leader for OptiCall. We do it for practices to create awareness, because without that, if they see our process, they're like, oh yeah, we do all those things. So as right. far as like what we're looking for is proper greeting. Do they ask for the caller's name and number up front to kind of build rapport and capture mm-hmm. the lead? Are they asking how they heard about the practice? Exploratory questions are nice. Things like, you know, what area are you interested in having treated? Have you ever been in for a consultation for a procedure like this? We don't want to go into a full consult over the phone, just enough to build some mm-hmm. rapport. And yeah. are they mentioning the consultation, or are they actually painting a picture of what happened? So that's another takeaway mm-hmm. from doing these assessments, is kind of the under promise over deliver. Don't just mention you have a right. free consultation. Talk to them about what happens. How long are they going to be there? Any expectations, yeah. before and after pictures? And
yeah, I can't tell you how many times, even on email form submissions, everybody's asking for, you know, schedule a consultation, book a consultation, schedule a free consultation. And yet they're making this huge leap of being on a website, reading some information, maybe even seeing some before and afters or testimonials or reviews, that kind of stuff. And now I'm ready to book a consultation. Okay. I think they're making a leap. I don't think that the vast majority of people, like you're saying, they're asking for the consultation. What they're asking are questions that may lead into a consultation, and maybe subliminally they're ultimately ready to schedule, but that's not what they first ask. They don't ask, can I schedule a consultation, as the first question that came out of their mouth. It's usually, do you offer this? And maybe some details about that, and then cost.
Yeah.
Okay. They're asking those kinds of things long before they just say, okay, book me a consultation. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you in terms of setting the table and making the consultation of value. You're selling the consultation, creating some value in it and what they're going to get out of it. You can't know whether or not a particular treatment, surgery, technology is right for you unless you go through this. You can talk about it and, you know, read all about it and stuff, but until you have a doctor look at you or a dentist look at you, there's no way to know that that's, number one, the right course of action, the right technology, that your problem is the most adequately serviced by that particular procedure or treatment. I've actually had, you know, cataract patients who I know they have cataracts asking, say, I'm going to go call about, you know, having LASIK done. I'm like, but that's their. So I think part of it is never assuming that the consumer knows enough to make a decision.
That's true.
You know,
in regards to price, which we sometimes say it's almost an artificial question sometimes, because a lot of people starting their journey don't exactly know how to distinguish one practice from the next. Mm-hmm. So we really encourage that. That's where creating that experience is important. That, I mean, it's kind of a balancing act of, some practices don't want to share price at all. Some list pricing on their website. Mm-hmm. My personal take is, like, have something prepared, so you're ready and you know how your team's going to answer that. I would encourage you to at least have a range, because if you don't share something with them, they're going to feel like you're hiding the information.
Yeah.
And you have such a small window to build trust. I think we had some stats that, like, people will decide if they trust you usually, like, within 15 seconds. So if you're telling them that they need to come in and you can't give them pricing over the phone, well, a lot of times that comes from the top down. So
yeah.
I personally try to enlighten the physicians we work with and the administrators in terms of, if you don't do those things, it can have an impact on your conversions and whether people are going to move forward with your practice or not.
Yeah, and I do think you're absolutely right, is preparing and training people to deal with the price question. We know there's never a time when I talk to an intake person for a practice, and if I ask them, what's the most common question you get from everybody, regardless of the procedure, what's the most common question they ask? Is it pain? Is it going to hurt? What's the recovery time? They're like, oh, no, it's cost. Cost is always number one. And absolutely, if you aren't prepared to deal with the cost question, if your people are uncomfortable dealing with, quote, shoppers and pricing kinds of stuff, then I generally tend to say you probably have the wrong person answering the phone, because you got to be comfortable dealing with price.
You mentioned the Broncos quarterback situation earlier. It kind of made me laugh because it makes me think about these practices that might be shorthanded, where maybe calls start getting routed to, like, the billing department or somebody that's not really tasked.
Not surprising.
So a question that often comes up for us is, how do calls get routed to OptiCall? We work with a practice. And this is something I recommend to, I know there's, like, different schools of thought of, a lot of practices say, well, what differentiates us is that we answer every call with a live person, which is great. In terms of scalability, this is our recommendation at OptiCall from our experience, is have a two-step recording, not necessarily this long phone tree, please listen closely as our options have changed, with 10 different options, just something simple that says something like, thank you for calling Jones Laser Clinic. If you're a first-time caller interested in one of our procedures or scheduling consultation, press 2. If you're an existing patient or all the calls, press 1. And then make sure that you have your A team on that line too. And it's not that you don't want everybody to have a great experience. It's just making sure that those calls are getting routed to the right people.
Mm-hmm.
I might actually say you might be better off having them go to a voicemail where somebody has to follow up than going to the wrong person in that case. And
I generally tend to agree with you because you only got one shot sometimes. Okay. And if you give it to somebody, man, if they're not ready, and half the time they don't even know that the call's coming. Mm-hmm. So I may be a billing and I get a call. I don't know who it is. I answer it. And now I'm getting hit on the back of the head with a prospective, you know, patient. I'm just not, you know, it kind of came out of the blue. I'd rather that go into voicemail than and have somebody who's really qualified follow up with it.
Right, versus somebody that's just confirming directions or something.
Yeah, I mean that's a whole different. You know, I'm gonna waste calls in that case.
With that auto recording, that's how we would handle overflow. So
okay.
When you set up a triage like that, we'll typically set it up during business hours where we go to that option for scheduling. After three rings, it rolls over to our team. So that's kind of how we're able to back up a practice and create value with that kind of relationship.
Yeah, I think that I'd rather have that by far. So kind of on just the kind of couple of things I'd like to get from you. Before we end this webcast, if I've got a practice that is not, say they're not doing great at converting, what would be your one? You know, I typically say my silver bullet is, in terms of generating leads, it is cost. You mentioned putting. You know, some people put pricing on their website, some people don't or whatever. I'm never a proponent of putting pricing right on the website. It eliminates the one reason why some people, or a question that some people can ask you, you know, now you're taking the reason to call you away. That is probably the biggest reason for somebody to call you is to get a price. Okay. In fact, I think you should turn it around. It should be the call to action, which should be, say, you know, got questions, need details, need a price, question mark? Absolutely. We're here to answer those questions, okay? Say it's okay to ask for price, okay? Say, you know, I invite people to ask the price question because if I've got really good people, we're going to slam dunk those prospects five times fold better than our competitors. If that's the attitude that we have, that we're going to deal and we train our people to handle those. So my question to you is, how do you deal with the price question? You know, what would you, your recommendation to dealing with pricing, especially if I'm not the cheapest guy in town? If I know my price is going to be, may scare some people off, okay? Mm-hmm. What would your number one recommendation for dealing with telephone calls when they're asking for price? How do you deal with that when you're one of the premium practices in the market?
It's about delivering exceptional experience. So by having a process in place, whether you use OptiCall or you follow the pattern, whatever you think works for you. I mentioned logical progression. So it's introduction, exploration, education, and closing, addressing price. I wouldn't focus on it too much. Just make sure that you can validate your price and why it is, so people feel like they've called the right place.
Right. So second side of that is when they call, ask price, and you go through this sequence, not everybody is ready to book then. They're thank you, blah, blah, blah. Even if you get their contact information, you get their phone, you get their email or whatever, how frequently should a practice, you know, think about following up? Because I get as much, as bad as the initial intake is for most practices, the follow-up is by fold worse. Mm-hmm. They get no follow-up after that initial phone call. What's your recommendation for practices that have the personnel to be able to do this? How frequently should they be following up? You don't want to be a nuisance, but at the same time, I know they're not converting in that first call.
You might be surprised with my answer here, but you also made me think of something with what you said about, like, you get through the call. Another great takeaway is make sure you guys have an informational offer to people that aren't ready to schedule. That's a buffer. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you have good collateral material that helps mm-hmm. you stand out, but that's a way to get the rest of the information. That's an area that a lot of practices miss. If somebody's not ready to schedule, they might defer to the website. So mm-hmm. have some kind of offer, even if it's generic, to maximize those opportunities. As far as how many times to follow up with our capture program, we do two personalized outreaches. So that's a combination of phone call, text, and email two times over. Best case scenario, we get them on the line, we book them. If they're not ready to book, we offer the information. We include a couple drip emails and a couple drip text messages. So the ongoing nurturing campaigns, awesome. You don't want to drown them to where it's too much, but maybe monthly, if not biweekly. I mean, that's kind of your discretion and how good your content is. As far as, like, how many times do you follow up on these prospects? I know different companies have different opinions. Some of the big pharma companies might say you need to reach out to them 6 times.
Right.
For us, the drop-off from the second personalized outreach to the third is so extreme that it's not cost-effective for us. So,
oh, is it really?
For us, it's my attitude comes from the Sandler sales training of try to qualify more prospects and stop chasing suspects. That if okay. There's got to be a balance and realistic expectations on your team, because that it's one thing if you've got people that are free, not doing anything. It doesn't hurt to hit the phones and incentivize mm-hmm. them to get some people in the door, especially maybe like a past Botox patient that's due to come in if you're running some mm-hmm. kind of special. But I'm more of a fan of maximizing them on the front end and then having more of those automated methods and putting out good content that building a following. That's my personal opinion. Because mm-hmm.
Well, I think
it kind of comes down to the 80-20 rule of how much time and resources it takes to follow up on old leads.
Right.
So we have a lot of practices that say we might have like thousands of leads from the past, that the conversions are like usually in the single digits on that kind of follow up.
Yeah. No, I think that's I'm surprised that it would be that big of a drop off from 2 to 3. I've actually heard from some consultants that say it's after the third one that they kind of drop off. But I think that 2 to 3 in that number there, I think is probably realistic in terms of that 80-20 rule, that mm-hmm. what is 80% of the highest quality stuff, it's going to be there. I definitely see a huge number of conversions happening after that first call with a lot of our practices.
I can see that. I was going to say 80% of the results come from the initial outreach, what we're seeing on capture. Mm-hmm. But we have seen by adding the additional touch points, the emails, the texts, the additional drip campaigns, mm-hmm. that conversions have gone up 20%. So yeah. I don't mean like from 30% to 50%, but like if they were at 30%, maybe up to 36%.
Right.
And for what goes into that, like it's worthwhile long-term to build those systems to make sure that you're creating great experiences and just with that collateral material, you never know where that's going to end up, that they might refer friends and family.
Yeah. I think you're right on. And this kind of goes, you know, speaks to what we do. It is about content. It's about quality information, quality resources that are of value to your target audience and somebody mm-hmm. that's inquiring about stuff that, you know, I generally tend to say, if we're adding content to our website, we should be talking to our intake people and say, what resources would be helpful for if you're following up with a lead or sending them an email, maybe it's amazing how many practices still don't have a what to expect during your breast augmentation or your LASIK consultation. Okay. Mm-hmm. Having a page on that, easy way of getting good information or maybe even converting it and adding video to it, so you're explaining it, you know, and you're walking somebody through it. I think those kinds of resources pages would be great for sales follow-up, mainly because, especially video. I think video is great for sales follow-up because now I'm actually, I just got off the phone with Susan. Now I know what she looks like, you know, and I can see this progression of a relationship and this confidence and trust that happens. I think those are things that practices should be, you know, looking into as opposed to just SEO. I'm adding content for SEO. I think arming you and your team and salespeople with better resources to help turn these people into consultations and give them more of what they need and want, I think is really what the website really should be, as much as it is to generate the lead. It should be there to help you close it.
And if you're using different means like virtual consults, I'll recommend practices do some kind of recording archive, just another tool to keep in their back pocket. I mean, you're going to have a better chance of converting people face-to-face in the office. With today's new era, we're seeing more virtual consults. That's another tool to just get more reach and more efficiency, where maybe if they don't respond to that, to actually have a recorded consultation.
You know, there is a company, I forget the name of it. I'll post it in another post, but what they did as part of their virtual consultations, it was all recorded. And they would send out the recording, and this was actually a high-end dental practice. I mean, his average patient was probably a $25,000 patient, because it's usually full mouth restoration, multiple teeth, that kind of stuff. He would do the record, and here's the thing. He would do a recording and he would, people would actually submit pictures online of their teeth, take pictures of their smile and stuff. And I don't like this, I don't like that. He would take those, do a virtual consultation, actually pull up their photos. He would pull in cases that he's done and explain what he would be doing to them, send this to them in a video recording. And he found that case acceptance, people that are willing to spend tens of thousands of dollars, his conversion actually went up with the recording more than just having them come into the office. If they just came into the office to do their consult, he was only seeing about 20, maybe 25% conversions to treatment because of the price being so high.
Yeah, they just were educated, right?
Yeah. So when he would send the video, though, when they would finally come in after getting the virtual and getting the video, his conversions went up to like 60%. He saw a more than 100% increase in his conversion of case acceptance because of the video, because it was the follow-up information that they got. And it wasn't just to them. The thing was, now that person was able to share their consultation experience with their husband, with their grandparents, with whoever was going to help in making this decision. They were able to, they can build momentum, the sales momentum, not just me, but other people are saying, oh yeah, do this. That would make a huge difference, or that was really cool, you know, kind of stuff. I think that kind of, you know, follow-up material, invaluable.
I agree. Even webinars, when you think of, some people might not be ready to come in face to face because they might feel pressured or not comfortable, where the more educated they are, the more likely you're going to be able to convert
that. And I think even with all this pandemic and all this other, you know, social distancing, even when this is over with, and hopefully sooner rather than later, but I am going to say this way of communicating virtually online, just like we're doing, that's not going away. That is actually a way that our society now has now become trained to consume information. So I think that kind of stuff in follow-up and dealing with patients, how you can, you know, deal with them in your intake and make it more of an experience, I think you're going to find, wow, you're going to convert a lot more, because I think today's audience is not the same audience as like when we first started doing marketing.
I agree.
Yeah. So, hey, Dylan, do me a favor, kind of share a little bit of your contact information. If somebody has an interest in doing that assessment that you mentioned, how can they get a hold of you? What's the best way to reach you?
So the website is opticall.com. Just go to the contact form. If you want to email me directly, it's D for Dylan, and last name is Kemna. That's K-E-M as in Mary, N as in Nancy, A as in Apple, at opticall, opticall.com. I'd be happy to help you. We'd be happy to do this lead conversion assessment. It can take 2 to 3 weeks. We're able to share the results for it. And
Is there a cost for the assessment? Is there a cost for the assessment?
Oh, no, the assessment is free.
Oh, okay. That sounds great. Crazy not to take advantage of it. Whether you use your service or not, there's huge value.
Yeah, we're just happy to connect with the people, create the awareness. It's a small industry, so the more people we can connect with and just talk about the opportunities, the better for everyone.
Makes perfect sense. Hey, Dylan, thank you again for all your time and insights today.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
You take care. Okay, bye-bye. Have a good one.
Thanks for joining us for the MedShark Insider with Bill Fukui. Join us next week for another dive into all things medical marketing. All episodes can be streamed at www.medsharkdigital.com/medshark-insider.